Hello, and welcome back to Addicted to Murder. This is Courtney, licensed professional counselor with 10 years of experience.
And this is Trisha, and I have very little feeling in my weenus.
Oh, care to explain?
Well, weenus is a slang word for the excess or loose skin at the joint of one's elbow. Can you use it in a sentence for me, Courtney?
I probably could. Something like, Trisha, can I see your weenus?
And I would show it to you. I'm proud of my weenus.
Good for you.
Well, we're back with part two of Jerry Brudos. And as always, we'd like to thank our listeners and our followers and everybody who has been supporting us. Email, as always, is addictedtomurderpodcast@gmail.com.
And our social media can be found on Instagram at addictedtompodcast or on our Facebook page for Addicted to Murder.
Okay, well, to dive right back into this, we learned about Jerry Brudos' childhood in the last episode, about how he was mentally disturbed. He spent time in a state facility. He was kicked out of the army for mental problems, and now he is back living at home with a mother who hates him and who he hates. Right, okay, so here we go. So one night when Jerry was living at his parents' house, he went to Salem and started following a girl in a red dress. He followed her up to her house, and as she turned around and noticed him, he strangled her until she was unconscious and stole her shoes. He did this again in Portland. He stalked another woman in high heels, strangling her, but not succeeding in doing so this time. She fought back, and he only got one of her shoes. So Courtney, we can see he's getting more bold. Do you have any thoughts on his progression from stealing from houses to stealing from women when he first attempts to choke them into unconsciousness?
Yes. So if we look at his evolution of his behaviors, there are a lot of signs that point to him, kind of this being the next step for him. So first it was stealing shoes and lingerie from neighbors. Then came the attacks on the teen girls to try and get nude photos, which is where the violence kind of really started, when he threatened one with a knife and beat up the other one. His fantasies were getting more violent, and there was now a clear connection between sexual arousal and violent behaviors and shoes. So it would be logical, kind of for lack of a better word, that his next step of escalation would be the need to inflict pain or violence while also stealing the shoes. And, you know, strangulation is not only a way to subdue victims in order to steal from them, but it would also fulfill that growing need for violence along with sexual arousal.
And control.
Yes.
Right. Well, throughout this time when he's violently stealing women's shoes, and then he goes and sleeps with the women's shoes, and then he uses them for comfort in regard to his mother's control, he did somehow obtain his FCC license, and he got a job at a Corvallis radio station. So at this time in his life, he was 6 feet tall and 180 pounds, and he was still a virgin. He remained a virgin until he met his future wife at 23 years of age. Her name is Darcy Metzler, who at the time was just 17. She was pretty and shy, and she grew up dominated by her father. She fit perfectly with Jerry's ideal woman. At first, she said Jerry was full of jokes and fun, and she was impressed with his job, and her admiration for him was something he had never experienced before. So Jerry was also extremely jealous of Darcy, which at first was charming. Regarding their courtship, this is what Jerry had to say later on. Quote, "I wanted someone to sleep with, and she wanted out of her home." I suppose some marriages are based on less, right? Mm-hmm. Courtney, Jerry finally found a woman who could tolerate him. Do you think this had a positive influence on his view of trusting women? It's surprising that he's still a virgin at the age of 23.
I mean, given his awkwardness and creepiness, it's not necessarily surprising that he had not found willing partners for sex up to this point. I am a little bit surprised, if I'm going to be honest, that he had not progressed to sexual assault by this time, though. Mm-hmm. As for Darcy impacting his view of women, I'd say it was too late for that. You know, by this time, it seemed like Jerry no longer even really thought of women as being people capable of trusting. They were more like objects to provide him with sexual gratification and a way to let out his rage.
Well, the couple had a daughter. Her name's Megan, and it was in 1962. And the marriage was happy for about 3 years. It was later revealed that anytime they had a fight or Jerry became depressed about something Darcy did or said, he would go out and steal shoes and underwear to make himself feel better. Jerry was not interested in his daughter. He would literally push her away if she tried to crawl to him. Courtney Ann Rule suggests that Jerry's disinterest in his daughter may be due to incestuous desire of Megan. Do you agree? My first thought was that she was another female and that they just can't be trusted.
So at this point, Jerry's no doubt a psychopath with sadistic sexual needs. And as terrible as it sounds, I believe that if Jerry had any incestuous thoughts towards his daughter, that he would have no problem acting on them. So the fact that he didn't, you know, kind of goes against that, right? I'd say his lack of interest in his daughter was likely just that, disinterest. You know, there was nothing that she could do for him, so he had no reason to even pay attention to her.
Okay. Well, Jerry and Darcy moved 20 times in 7 years. During this time, his migraines got worse, his depression would deepen when he thought Darcy didn't love him enough, and he continued his nighttime thievery. Darcy became pregnant for a time again, and for some reason, Jerry was very excited about this pregnancy. He made Darcy promise him he could be in the delivery room when she gave birth. Darcy ended up not allowing him in the delivery room, and this really upset Jerry. She told him it was because he got so jealous of her when another man touched her that she didn't think he could handle it, that because the male doctor was delivering the baby and touching her. Jerry took great offense to this and was very upset and could not understand why she would not let him in. Jerry was so very hurt by this that even stealing shoes and underwear did not make him feel better. So, Courtney, I'm assuming that Darcy again just reaffirmed that women aren't to be trusted. What do you think?
I mean, it's definitely possible, and this is actually sort of an interesting event to think about. My thoughts go to wondering kind of why he would care about her pregnancy and being in the delivery room, especially since it was kind of normal during this time frame for men to have nothing to do with delivery at all. So I would wonder if his desire to be there had anything to do with maybe like satisfying his sadistic needs in some way. I mean,
oh, because she'd be in pain.
Yeah, childbirth is widely accepted as one of the most painful things that a woman can endure. And we know Jerry really loved to see women in pain and suffering. And so, especially if he was also experiencing doubts or jealousy or feelings of rejection from Darcy, he might want to watch her suffer.
You blow me away, Courtney. I did not think at all about him wanting to see her suffer. I just...
It's just a theory. I don't have any evidence to back this up, I'll be honest.
Once you say it, though, it kind of makes sense. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Okay, well, since Jerry's depression wasn't alleviated with his usual routine this time, he decided to mix stuff up. One night in downtown Portland, he stalked a woman for hours, and he eventually followed her home. After he was sure she was asleep, he broke into her dwelling, rummaged through her closet looking for shoes, but she woke up and she saw a dark figure, and then he began to choke her. When she lost consciousness, he raped her and then took the shoes and left. So Courtney, in Ann Rule's book again, she reports that during this encounter, Jerry had the strongest erection of his life. It seems like this is likely due to having complete control over this woman. What do you think?
This interaction would have had all of the elements that he was looking for when it came to his sexual needs. He was able to control this woman through violence and pain, which would have been extremely arousing for him. And then he was actually able to satisfy his arousal through sexually assaulting her. And then on top of it all, he got his trophy shoes that he could then use to relive that moment over and over.
Okay, well, going on. January 26th, 1968, Linda Slauson had an appointment to sell encyclopedias in the town of Aloha, Oregon, which is a suburb of Portland. She was lost, and she could not read the address she had written down because of the ever-present Oregon rain. Jerry just happened to be outside his house, and she saw him and assumed that it was the house she was supposed to go to. Well, Jerry went along with this, assured her that it was the right house, and invited her in. He escorted her down to the basement, claiming that there was company in the main house. When she was looking through her paperwork, Jerry hit her on her head with a 2x4 and then proceeded to strangle her to death. This caused him such an adrenaline hit that he was literally high. After dealing with his family upstairs, he went back downstairs to the corpse. He then undressed her and then dressed her in different undergarments that he preferred to what she was wearing. Apparently, he spent hours dressing and undressing the corpse. He then cut off her left foot at the ankle and put her high heel on it and put it in the freezer. He then attached an engine head as a weight, drove to the St. John Bridge, and dropped her into the Willamette River. Jerry continued to dress up her foot in shoes, but soon got bored with this. He ended up weighting down the shoe and tossing it into the Willamette as well. Courtney, he did it. He slowly progressed to murder. He didn't plan this one. He didn't stalk this victim. She just happened upon him. What are your thoughts?
Well, here it is, right? He discovered the ultimate release for all of his pent-up rage. And how fortunate for him that he didn't even have to put in the effort of finding somebody. There was this perfect opportunity that he could just take advantage of. And her coming to his home where he could be comfortable and have more time with the victims, you know, since he didn't have to go out and follow somebody around for hours. It was just too good of an opportunity to pass up. And then once she was dead, he could do whatever he wanted to her. Make her into the perfect little sex doll that he had complete control over. And this would clearly be shown to be highly addicting to him, and he would start craving it more and more.
Well, and I bet also because his family was upstairs, it gave him an extra adrenaline hit to get away with it. You know, they had no idea what was going on downstairs.
Sure. I think I read that he had maybe, like, sent them out to go get dinner.
Yeah, he did that. And then, well, as we see when he goes on, he creates reasons why they can't come down into his basement.
Right.
But, yeah. So, sometime after this, at work, Jerry had a electrocution accident, and apparently it was very severe, and it would have killed a normal man or woman, but he was a big guy, a big, strong guy, so it didn't kill him. So just to give you a little bit of what we're dealing with here in size and robustness of Jerry. So Jerry and Darcy moved to Portland after the rape and after that accident at work. The honeymoon period was over for them. The pair no longer ran around the house naked as they once did, and Darcy refused to pose for any more naked pictures. Jerry insisted that she do this. She never liked doing it, but she was a little bit scared of him, so she would do it. Jerry always bitched at her that she didn't dress fancy enough or wear high enough heels, and Jerry put on a ton of weight. So much so that Darcy mentioned it to him. Instead of getting insulted, though, Jerry did something really peculiar. He went into their bedroom and he came out wearing a woman's bra stuffed with fake breasts, a girdle with his penis tucked away, garters and stockings, and the biggest high heels she had ever seen. Darcy did not know how to react to this, and Jerry was again disappointed. Courtney, anything you want to say about this cross-dressing at this point?
So people engage in cross-dressing for many different reasons. You know, for some, it's simply an opportunity to explore different sides of themselves and their personality. But for others, they are actually sexually aroused by presenting as the opposite sex. For Jerry, since he had a fetish for women's lingerie and high heels, he likely experienced sexual feelings while trying them on. And during this specific moment with his wife, he could have been making a statement about what he found sexually attractive and how she was not doing it for him.
Yeah. Okay. Well, at this point, Darcy was gone most of the week. Jerry's migraines were set off by any noise, and remember, they had two small children. When she was gone, however, Jerry would call her over and over again. He was, like, very possessive of her, but he made sure that she would call him before she came home. He did not want to be surprised. Jerry was dreaming about creating an underground butcher shop, someplace where he could round up many women, where he would torture them, rape them, and either shoot or stab them. When he was done playing with them, he would take them to his freezer room and pose them in positions he wanted and freeze them so they would be that way forever. Well, on November 26, 1968, Jan Whitney started the drive from the University of Oregon in Eugene to McMinnville, but she never made it home that evening. Her car was eventually found at a rest stop near Albany. I think I've been to that rest stop. You've probably been to that rest stop.
Me too.
Yeah. There was no blood or any signs of struggle in the car. Brudos later described that Jan's car had broken down and he offered to help. He got her and two hitchhiking hippies, his words, into his car, dropped the hitchhikers off, and then took Jan to his house where he strangled her, had sex with her corpse, dressed it up, and took photographs. He then strung her up in the garage. He then strung her up in his garage and day in and day out had sex with her body. He then removed both of her breasts because he wanted to turn them into paperweights. He did this by adding some sort of like plastic polyurethane type of thing, trying to get the mold just right. And apparently his wife picked one up and was like, "What's this?" and didn't realize it was a real breast. Anyhow, he then weighted her body down and threw her into the Willamette River also. March 27th, 1969. Karen Sprinkler was a freshman at Oregon State University, and she was home in Salem on what I imagine was spring break. That day, she left the house to go to Meyer and Frank department store and to meet her mom for lunch. Karen never showed up for lunch. Karen's car was later found on the top of the department store, and nothing looked amiss. Brudos had used a phony gun to kidnap her. He took her to his home, raped her, hanged her by a makeshift noose, had sex with her again, and then removed her breasts and unsuccessfully again tried to make them paperweights by using resins to create a kind of plastic again. He then took her to the Long Tom River and weighted her down with a car cylinder and disposed her body. One of the eyewitnesses of this kind of abduction said that Jerry was in drag at this time. So, I don't know. There's that.
It's possible.
Yeah. April 23rd, 1969, Linda Sally was 22 years old when she went shopping at Lloyd Center for Gifts. She was last seen at 5:15 by a shop worker. Brudos had flashed Linda a phony badge pretending to be a police officer and arrested her for shoplifting. She went along willingly with Brudos all the way back to his house in Salem. Brudos' wife was home, so he tied up the girl in his garage. He then raped her while he strangled her to death. Linda did fight her attacker, which pissed Brudos off. He then tied the overdrive unit to her. I don't know what that is, but it's something to do with a car, I'm sure. And dropped her into the Long Tom as well. So the Long Tom River flows off the Willamette, a little south of Corvallis, and meanders towards west of Eugene. It's not a big river, and I've seen it many times while traveling in the area. So one day in May of 69, a fisherman was doing his thing when he noticed an odd-looking log in the shallow water. It turned out to be the body of Linda. A few days later, Karen's body was found about 50 feet away from where Linda's body was found. So Jerry was not always successful. There were many reports of attempted abductions, including one in another parking garage where he attempted to abduct a young woman with a toy gun. Sharon Wood screamed, and he held his hand over her mouth. She bit down as hard as she could, and then her jaw locked. Jerry ended up having to slam her head on the ground to get her to let go, and then he ran away. There were other attempted abductions, and police were able to get descriptions from some of the survivors. Okay, Courtney, I'm going to stop after that just for a second to ask you if you have any thoughts about what's going on here.
I'd say we are clearly seeing a serial killer developing, you know, his modus operandi, right? So it seems like the steps of abduction, restraint, rape, murder, mutilation, and then, you know, rape again, essentially, is his thing, right?
He also would take pictures of the bodies.
Yeah. That's true. And there is clearly a certain level of confidence, or I might even call it arrogance a little bit here, that he seems so comfortable with abducting women in public places in daylight sometimes. Like, he feels like he's never going to get caught.
Right. Yeah. He's a prick. Okay, well, at this point, the police were identifying a pattern. and the survivors spoke of a big man with freckles. Detective Jim Stovall was seen that there was what he called a pseudo-menstrual cycle that dictated the killer's pattern. Now, Courtney, you and I had, or you had brought this up before that, you know, maybe with Jerry's mom wanting a girl, Jerry maybe tried to be a girl or something. I mean, and now he's saying that there's like a pseudo-menstrual cycle. Do you think there's anything to do with the women's clothes that he steals, wears, and a possible menstrual cycle pattern with these abductions? Or do you think it's just totally circumstantial and coincidental?
I think it's circumstantial and coincidental that, you know, this detective used that specific phrase, right? My guess would be that he was alluding more to kind of what we know of a serial killer cycle, where there's like, there's a murder, and then there's a cooling off period where things are calm mm-hmm. and he's feeling satisfied, and then it like slowly builds up kind of the pressure mm-hmm. of needing to do it again until he does.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't know what triggers these patterns, because I remember reading in the Ted Bundy one, there was a astrologist who was able to predict when his next kidnapping was going to be based on, she saw a pattern and it had something to do with astrology, and then she was right. I mean, it's its own science, I suppose. Okay, well, anyhow, there was a pattern being identified. Jerry had concocted a plan where he would call college dormitories and ask for girls with common names, like Susan or Linda or whatnot. If someone responded, he would ask them to meet up. And a couple girls did. One girl who went with Jerry for a Coke described him as being a big older man with a beat-up car with kids' clothes in it. He gave her the creeps, and at the end of their outing, let her go. He didn't harm her. She told her story to the detectives who were investigating OSU's campus, and they asked her to let him know if he called her again. So May 25th, 1969, Jerry does call the girl again. She puts off meeting with him for an hour, says she has got to do her hair or something, and calls the detectives, who say they will be there. The cops are there when he walks in and asks him if he will answer a few questions, and he does. They have nothing to charge him with, so he leaves. They do take notice of his car and his license plate. They look into his past, and they see his prior stay at the state hospital, and they decide to tail him. Eventually, they do get warrants for the cars, but there's nothing to be found. And then eventually they got a arrest warrant for one of the attempted abductions. They pulled over Brudos they pulled over the Brudos family on their way to Portland, and Brudos was hiding in the backseat under a blanket. They arrested him then. Okay, so we have a fetishist, cross-dressing necrophiliac who enjoys dressing dead women up as dolls and playing with them. What do you have to say?
Well, I think you just summarized Jerry pretty perfectly there, you know.
He's a lot.
He is a lot. I would add that he was also a sexual sadist and a psychopath to that list.
He's got a lot going on.
Yeah. And, you know, these were traits that very clearly had been developing from an early age, and they were even commented on during his stay at the state hospital when he was a teenager. And so it really is a shame that while he was there, psychologists just didn't have enough information or understanding of psychopathology and serial killers to know how seriously they should have taken Jerry's behavior when he was just a teen.
Right. Do you think it would be different today if he was, you know, in the state hospital today for the same reason? Which was, you know, he assaulted mm-hmm. that gal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, there's not even that many yeah. state hospital beds available anymore.
No, there's not. Chances are he would...
He'd just get out.
Or he would have just gone to juvie.
Right, and then gotten out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because that's just, unfortunately, how it goes. Well, Jerry Brudos at this time was only charged with Karen's murder. He pled not guilty and not guilty by reason of insanity. And at this time, an insanity plea only worked if the defendant could prove to be unable to determine the nature and consequences of his act at the time of the commission of the crimes. So meaning he had to know the difference between right and wrong at the time of the murders.
Do you think, or why don't you summarize what the psychiatrists for both the defense and prosecution had to say, and do you agree with them?
Yeah. So by this time in 1969, the mental health field had advanced a great deal since his evaluation at the state hospital in 1956. They were onto the second edition of the DSM, which identified a wider range of diagnoses that were more specific and categorized in different ways. So maladaptive behaviors and feelings were no longer just chalked up to schizophrenia and reactions to stress of some kind. So the psychiatrists hired by both the defense and prosecution had similar conclusions, and he was ultimately diagnosed with antisocial personality disorder, which is a pattern of criminal and socially reprehensible behaviors over time. Exhibitionism, so he likes having sex in public. And a bunch of other sort of deviant sexual disorders along with that, including fetishism, transvestism, known as cross-dressing, and also voyeurism, watching others. And then ultimately, their kind of big main point was that he had a severe kind of case of sadism, where he was sexually aroused by pain and suffering in others. So based on this, it's a lot of diagnoses, but I generally agree with them, particularly the antisocial personality disorder and sadism. But if we look at the ultimate question being asked, you know, was Jerry legally insane at the time of these crimes? And both sides very clearly said that Jerry was not insane.
Right. He knew that what he was doing was wrong.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. I'm glad that they did not deem him insane and not competent to stand trial. Well, eventually two other counts of murder would be added, and Jerry withdrew his insanity plea and pled guilty. Therefore, there was no trial. The fourth count for Linda Slauson would have to come from a different county, although he pleaded guilty to her murder at the time. He was sentenced to 3 life terms in Oregon, and at this time, Oregon did not have the death penalty, right? So he was there for life. Well, because the public was robbed of a trial, they went after his wife. They were convinced that she had to know what was going on. Her children became wards of the state at this time, and she actually was put on trial, and her daughter was called to testify against her mother. Her daughter was only 7 years old. I just can't imagine why this just boggles my mind. Much of the evidence that was found during the search of the house was presented as evidence against Darcy. Darcy had not seen all the photos of the women Jerry had taken, nor did she know about the torture and breast removal and rape and necrophilia. This trial was very humiliating, and there were nude pictures of Darcy shown as evidence. And it went on for about a month before a verdict of not guilty came back. And when they did put her daughter Megan on the trial, it was the prosecution that put her on the stand, and Megan was just so tearful and, you know, she actually kind of hurt their case, I guess, because she didn't say anything incriminating about her mom. And as weird as it may sound, I don't really think Darcy had any knowledge of what was going on. She had said that whenever she needed anything out of the freezer, Jerry would go down and get it for her, basically just kept her out of there. I mean, she might have known something was off with him, but I don't think she had any idea that it was this.
Right.
What do you think? Do you think she knew?
I agree with you. I don't think she knew. I think I was reading that not only did, you know, he like go down to the freezer to get something out of like the garage anytime it's needed, he actually installed an intercom system so that he could keep the door locked at all times. And he was the only one who had the key to it.
Right.
So even if she was curious, you know, there was no way she could have really gotten access to that without him knowing.
Right. Well, and then Jerry later said that there was a close call when he came back from a vacation or something with his family, and his garage door was busted in because someone's car had like kind of ran into the garage door, and the cops came to notify him that somebody hit their garage door. And at that time there was a body in it, but the cops didn't do any further investigation on the garage door. They just left, and he got away with it. Mm-hmm. You know, very, you know. So I want to say a quote that Jerry said regarding how he felt when he was asked if he had any remorse. This is from the book Lust Killer by Ann Rule. Okay, so I'm just going to read you a little bit. Jim Burns, a Marion County detective at the time of Brutos' arrest in 1969 and now a private investigator, recalls a conversation with Jerry Brutos. This is a quote. "He likes strawberry milkshakes, and I take them to him to try to get him to talk. I wanted to get to know how he really felt. One day I asked him, 'Do you feel some remorse, Jerry? Do you feel sorry for your victims, for the girls who died?' And Jerry's reply was, he then goes to say, 'There was a half piece of white paper on the table between us. Jerry picked it up, crumpled it up in his fist, and threw the ball of paper on the floor.' Jerry then said, 'That much,' he said, 'I care about those girls as much as I care about that piece of wadded up paper.'" Well, he died in Oregon State Penitentiary in Salem, Oregon, March 28, 2006, from liver cancer. Fuck him. That's all I gotta say about him. What do you think?
You know, Jerry Brutos is one of kind of like the OG serial killers, at least when it comes to those that were sort of known from the public. And he was one of the first to be interviewed when the FBI started studying like criminal behavior, specifically around violent crimes, and started developing their profiling program. So, you know, many fictional villains are said to have at least have some basis of inspiration from Jerry, including good old Hannibal Lecter from the Silence of the Lambs series, you know, and he might have a small victim count for a serial killer. You know, it was only, quote, 4 women.
Right.
But he definitely had a big impact on the general public and on the field of forensic psychology.
Right. He is portrayed in Mindhunter, right? Mm-hmm. The Netflix series, and also yep. in the book. And just so you guys might feel a little better about it, he wasn't treated well in prison by his fellow inmates. He was constantly in the infirmary with neck pain, bleeding buttholes, could be hemorrhoids, could be something else, all sorts of things, because he was a rapist, and you know, they're up there with pedophiles. They're not treated well in prison, so. He didn't enjoy his time in prison, I'm sure.
Yeah. And throw in the shoe fetish and the cross-dressing. Mm-hmm. And I mean, in that time, it was still practically a crime to be gay.
Right.
So.
Although he wasn't gay as
far
as
I know. He was not gay. But yeah. No, but
that's
like
a common affiliation.
Right. Like, right. That would have been, like, before sort of him, the worst thing you could be in jail.
Right.
And now there's this guy who dresses up as women, mm-hmm. and then rapes women.
Right. And then, yeah. Well, anyways, that is it for Jerry Brutos. I had never heard of him. I don't know how, because, man, did he have a lot going on. I know I've said that before.
He did.
And I've also been told I say I apologize too much. I apologize. So, Courtney is picking our next killer. Do you have anything you want to say about that? Any clues you want to give?
Yeah, so I am really excited about this killer. This is another one that is, we'll say, close to home. And kind of at the time especially, he's been known as the most prolific serial killer in the United States.
Oh, damn.
Yeah.
Hey, Samuel. How's it going?
On a scale from 1 motherfucker to 10, I'm at 1,000,000 motherfuckers.
All right. See you next Tuesday.
Bye.